towards the end of Parshas Mishpatim. A lot of halachos. Yeshiva Bachrim get very excited. Parshas Mishpatim. Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. As you can tell, you look around shul, people that learned in yeshiva get very excited. People that did it, not so much. Very technical, very confusing. Same thing with Megillah. Right, Yeshiva Bachrim, they wake up in Perek Tes. Okay, the stories are over. Now tell me the halachas. Mishloach Manos, Matanos Levyonim, Niskarim Venasim, Nisvarim, Dafim, Rishonim. So you guys will learn Bav Metzia. Those of you who were in the beginning of the year, remember we learned the Parshios, V'chi Yitenish, Arayeo Kesev, O'Kele Lishmor, Ba'alavimo, Lo Yishalem, Ein Ba'alavimo, Shalem Yishalem, Mikra Nidrash, Lefanav, Lefnei Fanav, Ir of Parshios, Ksivkan, Asher Yomar, Kihuzah, Rebchia Kamaisa. It's all coming alive this week. It's all coming alive in Parshas Mishpatim. The sukkah that we spent hours and hours dissecting and crunching and decoding. Now we're actually going to read them from the Torah Kedoshas. It's an exciting week. And then all of a sudden, right after all those sections, and then the section of the Yom Tovim and of Shemitah, very relevant, nice Shemitah coincidence, all of a sudden, Torah has it seems like a throwaway pasuk. Source number 3, Parachav Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Uvechol, there are sheets on the back if you didn't get sheets, or sheets somewhere, at least these sheets are where the sheets. And guys, coming a little late. Uvechol, thank you. Uvechol, Asher, Amarti Alechem, Tishameru. Everything I've told you, you should be careful about. Uvechol, Asher, Amarti Alechem, Tishameru. Isn't that redundant? If Hashem wrote them in the Torah, we have to be vigilant, we have to be scrupulous. It's built in. Why does the Torah have to repeat everything I've told you, be careful about? Tishameru? Follow Kodesh Baruch Hu's halacha. Why would you think otherwise? So our Chazal sensed that this is a generic pasuk, which is inserted into Mishpatim, but it has a generic global message. Very often you'll have a pasuk which teaches us something global and broad, not related to the particular section. We have to study the message. But then we may have to ask ourselves, why is that message embedded here? Why is this the moment to deliver the message? First, let's think about the message. What is the message of Uvechol Asher Amarti Alechem Tishameru? What is this message? Why is it here? That's a whole different story. What's the message? So there are two messages. One which Rashi provides is based on a Mechilta, and the other part of the Mechilta. So I'll read the two messages in the Mechilta. Source number 3, part base. Uvechol Asher Amarti Alechem Tishameru. Remember, whenever that word Tishameru appears, that's a code for a lav. Pen, Hishamer, Va'al are three words in the Torah which also connote an Isser, aside from the obvious lo tirtzach, lo tinach. The obvious is the lo. Whenever the Torah writes lo, that's a prohibition. But sometimes there are words that don't exactly sound like not, but they're still not. Hishamer, pen, al, pen tishkach, hasad barim, hishamer lecha, al. So these are three words that remind us that we've got a lav on our hands. So what lav are we talking about, right? There's nothing specific in the first part of the pasuk. Second part of the pasuk is not to mention Gentile names, not to mention deities, not the Gentile names, but Gentile deities. Gemara says you shouldn't even, that's why the Gemara says you shouldn't even shop around the time of a Gentile celebration, a Gentile holiday, because the Gentile may feel, those of you in Dafiyomi may feel so excited about the purchase, he'll thank his deity, and you will have indirectly cause to mention. Let's be a little bit careful, those of you who will find themselves over the next couple of years in Gentile surroundings, not to mention any things which any deities or official names, just, you know, we don't mention it. It's not part of our world. We don't bring them into, we're trying to distance them from our world. So that's the second part of the pasuk. What about the first part of the pasuk? Rashi says, Lasos kol mitzvos asay. This is not about Parshas Mishpatim. It's every single one of the 248 mitzvos asay. Kol mitzvos asay. This is really general. Kol v'chol asher amarti aleichem. All the mitzvos asay. Tishameru. There's a lav. If you don't put on tefillin, you get a lav. If you don't learn Torah, you get a lav. If you don't put on tzitzis, tzitzis maybe different, you get a lav. If you don't eat matzah, you get a lav. If you don't take lulav, you get a lav. Uvechol asher amarti alechem, tishameru. Lasos kol mitzvos esei, the azhara. Shekol Shmir Shabbatar Azharahi B'makom Lav. Now, what I just said was exaggerated. It's not true. If you don't put on tefillin, you don't violate a lav. If you don't eat matzah, you don't violate a lav. This is a message, not an actual tabulation of how many isurim you get. You are mevatel mitzvah's essay. But the Torah is covering and overlaying a language which sounds like a lav to mitzvah's essay. And what's the purpose of this? What is the Torah's interest in overlaying an azhara and a lav to the world of mitzvah's essay? Because in our minds and in our practice religiously, we sometimes create an unfortunate, incorrect, and unhealthy dichotomy between two parts of our world. I would hope that at some level, when you violate something, God forbid, intentionally or unintentionally, you feel like you've passed into an impure zone. You're somewhere else. The best way I can describe it to you is, let's say, with the last time you drank milk and you forgot that it was within this 5 or 6 hour or 3 hour radius, depending upon what your minig was. Now keep in mind, that's really a drabbanon, and you're not eating together, or you're not eating, but you feel grossed out. You feel as if there's something, or if you've ever had, God forbid, but there are always these stories that come up with a local butcher was selling pork, or was selling horse meat, or was selling non-kosher meat, or was mixing it in, or the mashgiach was you, and you ate there, like, oh my goodness, like, whoa, what came into my system? It's disgusting. I mean, false by it. Hashem says this is us. Like, could you imagine tonight, seriously, if you sat tonight to a pizza night, right, and you ate the pizza, then 3 hours later, the cook said, oh, it's no surprise. I threw in some meat anchovies. Like, you'd be horrified. You feel like, what am I supposed to do? I'm baser b'chalav in my veins and my blood. It's revolting. I say about Rav Moshe Feinstein that he once, again, there's big debates about whether he did drink Chalav Yisrael, not Chalav Yisrael, but whatever, put that issue aside. But at one point, they told him that the milk he was drinking was not Chalav Yisrael, which, at least according to this version of the story, was for him like drinking non-kosher milk. And he ran over to the sink and he forced himself to throw up. Now, don't try that at home, but you've all been there, right? Have you ever felt like you wanted to throw something up that you ate accidentally or you didn't know, or at least you wish you could get out of your system? You get that milk out of the system 2 hours after you ate meat or something. And hopefully that feeling and that association of something toxic, it's poison. Hashem said it's awesome. Like what would happen if like I woke up and you told me I ate shellfish or crayfish or squid? Like, what? And Hashem says it's awesome. It's toxic. It's not healthy for me. It's not something to be part of. To get it out of my system, out of my world. And hopefully that same feeling can stretch not just to the more visceral and physical Yisurim, but it could also stretch to whatever. You saw something you shouldn't have seen. You heard something you shouldn't have seen. You don't just feel bad and regretful and remorseful. You feel like, okay, well, what am I? Okay, here's a good gut check. Okay, think about everything that your modern Orthodox eyes have seen over the last 4 or 5 years of your life that you wish you hadn't. If you could just undo it and unsee it. You can't unsee things. You see certain things, they last with you. They leave an indelible imprint. You're going to see things. They're always going to be flooding your minds. One of the great, great casualties of pornography and of objectifying women and of the internet, ultimately it catches up with you. Ultimately, not just the hardcore dangers of addiction, and ultimately it's just the way you see women and the way when you just walk down the street or just looking at another human being and has a head and a mind and thoughts and ideas and respect and dignity, we just can't get out of your mind because that's all you've seen. And you just, instead of seeing a person, like, you know, you look at me, you're seeing a person, you're not seeing anything sexualized, you're not, all of a sudden you look at a and you just can't disassociate, and then you become basically your biggest casualty because you can't unsee certain things you've seen. And you can't unhear certain things you've heard and certain words, certain imageries, certain curses, and certain, you have to live with them. You have to try to navigate your way through. So when there's a world of Isra, oh, it's toxic. It's like, could you imagine if you're Mechalel Shabbos and, like, God forbid, you know, what do you feel like when when it's accidentally, you turn a lot, like you shake, okay, you move on because it was an accident, your elbow slipped, But somehow there's this other part of religion called mitzvahs esse, accomplishments. And somehow, in that world, even if we shudder in the other world of Lota says, yeah, it's all right, you know, no pain, no gain. I had such a good day. I didn't learn so much Torah today. Yeah, I didn't do that well. I mean, I missed it. It's not, you know. Because that's how we treat our lives. We treat our non-religious parts of our lives, right? If you're a citizen in any country, so if you don't commit a crime, if you commit a crime, it's terrible. That's an affront. That's a violation. It's an encroachment. If you don't commit some act of public decency or public kindness, okay, so you don't get a medal. No one's going to award you. But, you know, I'm just an average citizen. I'm keeping the law and I'm giving to my private lives. And somehow we remap that dichotomy into our religious lives. I haven't committed any Surim. I haven't been violating Shabbos and I'm keeping kosher. And did I learn? Did I not learn? Did I accomplish? Did I not accomplish? Was it Mekayim Mitzvah? Was it not Mekayim Mitzvah? Another Shmoneh Esrei lost and another Modim lost and another Tefillin without another. And this pasuk is saying, stop. Stop. Lost potential should be as revolting as infraction. The inability to perform a mitzvah, the inability to study a sugya well, the inability to accomplish something, squandering potential is a crime at a certain point. Those are words Rav Lechenstein would use with us. Squandered potential at a certain stage is itself the greatest crime. And it's akin to encroachment and infraction and violation. Uvechol asher amarti alechem tishameru. Now that doesn't mean they're equal. It doesn't mean you need to get malchus for not putting on tefillin. It just means that some of that charged, focused, vigilance, concern, inspection, remorse, when you fail, has to carry over into the world of mitzvahs esse. And not just mitzvahs esse, but also just accomplishment in life. If at the end of the day you didn't accomplish in a gross fashion, you completely, completely wasted a day, you completely, completely wasted a night, I hope you feel broken and I hope you feel frustrated. I hope you feel this was a breakdown, this was a fiasco, this was a choke, this was something bad. Now how am I going to recover tomorrow? You didn't violate anything. You didn't need nothing. The best I can describe it to you, okay? The best I can describe it is the closest you come in the world of mitzvah esse, I hope, when you forget a tefillah. When the last time you forgot a tefillah? Something was missing. Something was off. Something, you felt bad. Can you bring that same feeling to a day in which you didn't learn well enough? A day in which you weren't making mitzvahs well enough? A day in which, can you bring that same, running out of time, the meeting will end in 10 minutes. What do we do here? They'll restart it? Or you restart? Okay, restart it. Okay. Can you bring that same feeling? That's the first message of the Mechelta. It's a great way to lead your life. If you don't have that corrective mechanism, you don't have that conscience, you'll just find yourself slipping into that big, big, gray, relaxed religion area of life. I hope no one in this room will violate Lo Taseis. I hope no one in this room will violate Shabbos. And no one in this room will violate Kashrus. No one in this room will violate Yisri Arayos. And no one in this room will wear Shatnez. More or less today, the world of Yisurim is built in. If you live your life in an Orthodox community, basically Kashrus isn't a struggle. Shabbos isn't a struggle. Yisurim isn't a struggle. Again, the internet poses certain challenges, but it's really not, again, deraisa drama, but more or less, it's easy to reach that stage where you're not violating anything. That's your life. He's not violating anything. There's no productivity. There's no drive. There's no goals. There's no accomplishments. There's no self-inspection. There's no inventory. Have I accomplished it or not? The nights just become hours of wasted days and wasted nights. And then you wake up one day and you just, nothing to show for. You're in a safe zone. You're playing it safe. You haven't violated any serum. Great. What have you accomplished in religion? What are your accomplishments in religion? What mesechtas have you finished? What midas have you improved on? What mitzvahs have you collected? What What have you built? And when those hours and days just don't become anything and don't yield anything, that's almost as if conceptually violated HaKadosh Baruch Hu's potential. You've stolen from, you've stolen Hashem's time. I mean, people are dying around us. Hours and minutes. People are counting hours and counting minutes and savoring and going back and being with elderly people another week and another time and a fourth. So time is given to you by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You just waste time. If people waste time, then you it's a crime. That's one message of Rashi. Uvechol asher amarti alechem tishameru, lasos kol mitzvah biyazhar. Every mitzvah tasei becomes overlaid with a lo tasei, not literally, but experientially. Second message of Rashi is even more interesting. It's actually not the Rashi, it's in Mechelta. Source number Gimel, part 3. Rama Nema. Levisha Omer v'samtas ha-shulchan. Because the Torah is going to tell you where to put the shulchan of all the things. The shulchan, really strange on that one. Im Shina, if you move the location of the shulchan, over below tase, you get a low tase. Shenema uvechol asher amarti alechem tisha. Be careful. Make sure you place the shulchan exactly where it's meant to be. And in the middle of Mishpatim, it should be, if anything, as odd and bizarre as this Isser, not to relocate or move the shulchan a few inches left, a few inches right, shouldn't be in Mishpatim, should be in Truma. What is this Isser of moving the shulchan? Why is it in Truma? Why is it in Mishpatim, not in Truma? Well, this is a different general principle, which has relevance to the shulchan and relevance to Mishpatim. So listen carefully. A lot of people, when they think about religion, and then when they practice religion, they have an easy time with the concepts and with the generalities and with the values and with the thoughts and what is Hashem and what are His expectations of me? What is His role in history? The state of Israel, the Jewish people, morality, ethics, values, tradition, family, Shabbos, Yom Tov, Nida, the Jewish way of life, the Jewish... The details? Come on. Does it really make a difference to Hashem if I put the potato kugel on the blech this way, or I put the potato kugel on the blech that way? That's what religion's about, an extra piece of tinfoil. That's what religion's about, an extra day of keeping nida. That's what religion's about, 3 more minutes of chumrah of Shabbos, or 2 more minutes of this shiur of matzah. That's really, that's what Pesach's about, really, shiur of matzah. We're talking about prophecy and redemption and liberating slaves in Jewish history. It really meant, come on, just eat your matzah. The symbolism, it's the disguise, the ideas, the large. I'm talking to a group of boys that are into the world of ideas. Baruch Hashem. That is a lost art in today's world. Fewer and fewer people are interested in ideas because halachic practice has become so rigorous and because halachic knowledge has become so demanding and because, thank God, there's an investment. So a lot of people, when you talk to them about ideas, it's just not their thing. Just tell me what I have to do. And it's a very low-lying, I don't say shallow. Shallow is already judgmental and pejorative, but very simple, basically one-dimensional approaches. Baruch Hashem, we're training you to have deep ideas and complex ideas and panoramic ideas, and what is Pesach, and what is Eretz Yisrael, what is our people, what is... But as with everything else in this yeshiva, if you just drink the Kool-Aid, and you just thrive based on what happens naturally here, without complimenting it, which what isn't as emphasized often, you'll be half. You'll be a Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Charan. You'll be a half an Oved Hashem. Can you drill down to details? Can you do it in your practice, which is easier? Can you say, if I'm going to keep Shabbos, it's not just about sitting around the table and asking, what does Bryas HaOlam mean? What is Hashem's role in history and in creation? But I have to know and practice how to cut a cucumber, how to make salad dressing, how to use hot water or not to use hot water, how to use a blech, what is considered dash, how to peel, how to squeeze, come on, that's what religion is about, peeling, squeezing, dicing, and slicing. Yeah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will trickles down to the details. And what makes halacha and halachic observance so powerful and so fascinating is that it stretches across the entire spectrum of human experience. And not only across the entire spectrum, but yes, it drills down to the details because that's what makes it so enduring and so influential. Because the more general it is, and the more compartmentalized it is, it just becomes a religion of values, Sunday morning, in the church, listening to the pastor, talking about being a good person, being... I worked in a really interesting team of scientists, computer scientists, not real scientists, computer scientists, I'm scientists. They're not a code. I was a computer scientist with a team of IBMers in the mid-80s. So we worked together and we built an intranet about 7 or 8 years before this thing called the internet popped up in society. We were visionaries. So we linked together 80,000 IBM computers on the East Coast and they could talk to each other through computers and send little files and send little messages. So it was on the staff. So we're on the staff together. Let's put it this way. Most of the staff, they were over Nibble Pen, Gilu Arayos, not so much Shrichas Damim, Lashon Hara. A lot of Lashon Hara. A lot of Nibble Pen, a lot of Gilu Arayos. Everyone knew that when Michael was around, Michael was the rabbi. It's me. Michael is the rabbi. We can't cuss in front of Michael. Can't sit on each other's laps. The women in the staff, they don't sit on my lap. They sat on Joe's lap. They sat on my lap. Not on my lap. You know, no Lashon Hara. I'm not going to stand for it. Michael's around. Rabbi's around. Anyway, one person on staff started to get very interested in who Michael was. His name was Larry. And Larry was the assistant priest in his church. And Larry Williams discovered really quickly that Michael could help him write some pretty good sermons. So Larry and Michael would sit every Thursday during lunch break, and I'd help Larry with the sermons. I remember the first time I helped Larry with a sermon, I said, Larry, what do you want to talk about this weekend? He says, this week I want to talk about do unto others as you do unto yourselves. After that, that's a great topic. I never liked that one. Let's go with it. What aspect do you want to talk about? He looked at me like a deer in the headlights. What do you mean, what aspect, Michael? Do unto others as you do unto yourself. I said, but what aspect of it? He said, what do you mean, what aspect? If you asked me to talk about the after the Kamacha, I'd say, okay, how does it apply? To who does it apply? Where does it apply? What does it not apply? Go to Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ritva, because that lends magnification. I'm just dealing with a platitude. Religion and platitudes. Imagine how religion were platitudes. Sabbath observance. Kashrus observance. So, some people are so platitudinous. The whole life is a platitude. The whole life is a phrase. Life isn't a phrase. I like sometimes when I interview kids for high school, because some high school kids are really right in that stage. And I got to project, can I bring them to the land of substance, away from the land of platitudes? What do you want to do next year? Seal the deal. Oh, what else? Turn over a new leaf. Turn it to high gear. I'm sitting there trying not to laugh because I can't laugh the kid out of the interview. I'm going to kick it to high gear and I want the Israeli experience and Israeli integration and to seal the deal. Give me some of the content. Like, tell me what you really want to do. Like, get past the phrases. Like, what do you want to do? Your life isn't a phrase book. It's not a system of phrases. Avoid the phrases. Phrases will get you lost in emptiness. Phrases are good once in a while just to summarize something. But attach them to substance, not terminology. So halacha is broad, and halacha is multi-layered, and it drills down to details, and that's what makes it real and ever-present. And what do I do? I think you have to, Kaleva, I'll put my mask on just in case you're a little concerned. Okay. Okay, so we'll just take a pause for a moment to let our Bidud people join us again. I'll pause the replay. Oh, that was missing, so... Is this being recorded? No. Okay. Somebody has to share. It's all right. I stopped it when you restarted. It started again. So only if you hear. This won't be recorded. Okay. So much of our growth is looking at other people and comparing and contrasting. What do we agree with? What do we not agree with? What do we want to adopt? What do we not want to adopt? Making personal decisions. Yeah, but at that point... Can you say, yeah, this is the decision I want to make for me. This is my truth. But I don't fully understand the other person. Life is complex, and the human condition is complex. And let me give people benefit of the doubt, rather than being dismissive, rather than being disparaging, rather than being superior to people, rather than... One of the hallmarks, I was just discussing today with a rabbi in America who lived in this yeshiva 25 years ago, I came to record one of these videos. It's like, what are the hallmarks of being a talmid of this yeshiva other than the obvious? It's an intellectual honesty. Be honest when you think about things. Recognizing the complexity of the human condition. Life isn't black and white, but the shades of gray. There are differences. And learning that you're going to disagree with someone without hating them or without attacking them or disparaging them. So much as body language today. So much of where we fail in disputes is body language. I never saw Reb Lechem Zinner. He disputed people, and some of those disputes were harsh. I never saw him disrespect any human being. Even people who he felt were dead wrong. Dead wrong and dangerous. Never said anything attacking them or attack their ideas or those ideas. And I don't know where we've gotten to in a world. It's just a very hostile and angry world. Where if you disagree with someone's ideas, then all of a sudden that person is less, as of less meaning and less value, and is caricatured and is defamed. And it's so important to learn how to disagree. And how to disagree passionately. I mean disagree. Oh, let's sit around the table and talk casually about our disagreements. We're all liberals here. We can all accept each other's opinion. You tell me. No, but disagree passionately. I really believe that's a dangerous position. I really believe that's something that's toxic. It's corrosive. It's hazardous. It's unhealthy. Be careful about it. Okay, but you're wrong. You're not evil. You're just wrong. Things are being wrong and being evil. Things are being wrong. Evil is evil. Wrong is wrong. Wrong is wrong opinions. Misguided opinions, imbalanced opinions. So being Mesunim Badin is not just how you behave as a judge, it's how you behave when you view people. Do you understand the flip side? It's what people go through. Sometimes at a Levaya, I walk away, and I just feel so bad because we shrink people into little snapshots and little phrases and little stigmas and labels. And then when their lives are unfolded at a Levaya, and you hear their spadim and you hear what their lives are, you say, oh, I know that person. I thought that person was because I didn't have the chance to get to know them. But now that I got to know the person, I hear what his children had to say, what his grandchildren had to say, what the people there, I was just so off. Like I had such a simplistic little view of that person. The Mishnah, Avos Drev Nasan, which is a companion to Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah talks about Mesunim Adin in a slightly related context. It talks about three Svarim of Shlomo that were originally banished. Anyone know the three Svarim of Shlomo that were originally banished? We weren't allowed to read them for a few generations. It was prohibited. Books were taken off the shelves. Which were the three books of Shlomo? Come on, easy. Koheles, because it's theologically provocative, right? It's like the whole world is meaningless, and just enjoy yourself when you're young, because in the end of days, that's our goal, that's our game plan. What else? Shir HaShirim, it's rated R. And Shlomo HaMelech is the last person. Like, it would be one thing if, like, the Gadol Hador, Mr. Squeaky Clean, where Shlomo HaMelech and his run into that world, so like he's the person to be writing a rated R sefer. And what others say for Mishlei? These were three Svarim that just they couldn't wrap their heads around. And they banished them. Until Chizkiah's scribes, Chizkiah's scholars, sat there and they made sense of it. And they explained to people, no, this is what Shlomo meant in Koheles. He's tempting you by voicing the voice inside of you. When he says, enjoy yourself when you're longing, live it up, and sow your oats, that's because everyone hears that voice anyway. And he's trying to let you know how tantalizing that voice is and how to avoid it. And when Shlomo HaMelech is describing a rated R or C, it's because the greatest love that a human being can feel towards another human being is the love of Eros, the love of erotic love. And that's the pitch of love you should feel with the Kaddish Baruch Hu when you feel deeply, deeply committed as a Jew. And so you just look at it a little more carefully and not just going to throw the books in the garbage. You'll realize there's something really deep here and really unapproachable or almost inexplicable. Like no one can even, without Shlomo Melech's breath and sweep and chachma, no one can even imagine this. But that's why Shlomo was such a chacham, because Shlomo gathered such vast worlds of different knowledge bases, and he was able to articulate ideas that no one else can even imagine articulating because they didn't have his sweep. Not saying that Shlomo was flawless and was impeccable. He had his own flaws. And David HaMelech had pure passion. They were different people. That's why David HaMelech performed tshuva. And Shlomo, unfortunately, never got around to tshuva for his own picadillos with the daughters of Paro. But so when you think about people, walk away from this shir, walk away from this yeshiva. Life is complex. People are complex. Don't silhouette them. Don't draw them in black and white. Don't assume you know them. Don't assume you know their background. Don't assume you know their motivation. But that doesn't mean, getting back to what I said before, yeah, it's all good and so on. No, there are values. There's black and white values that you should accept. There are certain values that overstep, and you should be able to say those are the... But I'm not necessarily going to paint the person based on the values. I don't know where that person's motivations are. The motivations may be a little different than I understand them. These are not the values I want to live my life by. But I mean, I'm going to create us and them. I'm going to create polarized, radicalized differences between the forces of good. Some people I really believe see the world that way. I really believe. One of the challenges in the Haredi world today, I truly believe They're still stuck in the 19th century where it's us versus them, and everything secular is out to break down, and everything secular is out to undermine everything religious. That's what it was in 1850 in the shtetl. It's just not that world today. Secular Israelis are not looking to break religion. They're just not religious. And they don't want to be religious. But they don't have a secret Confederate conspiracy plan to undermine everything religious. It's not who they are. It's not where we're living. We have struggles and challenges, but that's not our world. And suddenly you just get caught in convention. It's us versus them, and they're all out to get me. No one's out to get you. Don't see the world that way. See the world that way, it will become your reality. Let's stop here. Half the share will be uploaded. The other half up in the other world.